Imagine this scenario for a second. You run a growing e-commerce business in Canada,
Right.
and you sell, I don't know, a $50 premium cotton t-shirt to a brand new customer over in London.
Right, a pretty standard international sale.
Exactly. So the transaction goes smoothly, the package ships out, but a week later, the customer decides they want to return it. And suddenly you discover that getting your own $50 t-shirt back across the Atlantic is going to cost you like $75 in return shipping, reverse customs fees, and non-refundable duties.
Yeah, you are literally paying to lose money at that point.
Exactly. And that is the mission for today's deep dive. We're digging into a stack of logistics research, specifically, a really comprehensive guide and some great insights from Freightcom aimed at Canadian businesses shipping globally.
Which is such a vital topic because, well, that t-shirt scenario, that is playing out right now for thousands of businesses who are just attempting to expand globally.
Yeah, and the goal here is to demystify those hidden traps, right? We want to lay out the strategic steps of sending goods across borders so you, the business owner or logistics manager listening to this, can actually scale up without just, bleeding your profit margin on tracked packages and unexpected fees.
Because the assumption is almost always that international shipping is just a longer version of domestic shipping. You know, you put an item in a box, you pay a carrier, they put it on a plane, and well, it arrives.
Right, but taking a product across a border fundamentally changes the physics of the entire transaction. It's not just slapping a stamp on a box anymore. It's more like an international flight.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, like the ticket price you pay to the airline is just the tip of the iceberg, right? You still have to clear passport control, you have to adhere to the, strict liquid rules, and you might get hit with a massive fee for overweight baggage right at the gate.
It is a very fitting parallel because, I mean, the base transportation rate you see at checkout, that's entirely separate from the regulatory gauntlet that comes next.
And the research points to this massive initial trap, which they call the Canadian origin illusion, which to even begin figuring out what a shipment will cost, you have to state where your product comes from, right?
Right, and that sounds simple, but it really isn't. Because it's crucial to separate the country of shipping from the country of origin.
See, common sense would tell me that if my business is in Toronto and, my inventory is sitting on shelves in a Toronto warehouse, then I am shipping Canadian products.
Well, common sense often clashes with international trade law, unfortunately. A warehouse in Toronto or Calgary, that dictates your shipping origin, but it tells customs absolutely nothing about the actual economic origin of the product.
Wait, really? So they don't care where it's stored?
Not at all. The authorities want to know where the goods were actually manufactured, grown, or substantially transformed.
Okay, let me test a scenario on you then, because this substantial transformation thing sounds like a bit of a gray area.
Go for it.
Say I decide to sell premium baked goods, and I import specialty flour from France, and I bring in chocolate from Switzerland. But I mix those raw ingredients together and bake a cake in my commercial kitchen in Toronto.
Okay, sounds delicious.
Right. But when I ship that cake to a customer in the US, is it a Canadian cake or is it a European cake in the eyes of a customs agent?
So that is where the actual mechanics of international trade agreements come into play. Customs authorities look at the product's DNA. And, you know, Canada is part of several major global trade agreements like CUSMA with the US and Mexico, CETA with the European Union, and the CPTPP for the Asia Pacific region.
Right, and the purpose of those agreements is to give preferential duty-free treatment, right? Like a free pass for anything crossing the border between those countries.
Well, yes, but to prevent a non-member country from just routing their goods through Canada to get a free pass into the US or Europe, these agreements have very strict rules of origin. It's essentially an anti-loophole measure.
Ah, okay. So if a factory in a non-treaty country ships thousands of fully assembled smartphones to a warehouse in Vancouver and they just slap a new label on them and ship them to Germany, CETA is going to give those phones a duty-free pass.
Precisely. The European customs agents will identify those phones as originating outside the treaty zone. So standard and often very heavy import duties will apply.
Okay, but going back to my cake scenario.
Right, the cake. Because you imported raw ingredients and fundamentally transformed them through a manufacturing process like baking into a completely new product with a totally different tariff classification, that transformation in Toronto would likely qualify the cake as a Canadian origin good.
Oh, sweet. So it would be eligible for duty-free entry into the US under CUSMA?
Yes, but, and this is the real trap, You still have to prove it.
Meaning I can't just assume the customs agent knows I baked it myself.
Exactly. You must provide strict documentation, usually a formal certificate of origin, proving that your product meets the specific criteria of that trade agreement.
Wow, okay. So relying on a free trade agreement without doing the paperwork is basically just setting your profit margins on fire.
It really is one of the most expensive mistakes a business can make.
So if a simple warehouse location doesn't guarantee a free pass, how do you even figure out what to charge the customer? Because the sticker price from the shipping carrier doesn't include any of that customs math, right?
Right. The carrier rate is only the transportation portion. What a business really have to calculate is the landed cost.
Landed cost. Okay, what goes into that?
It's the true comprehensive financial toll of getting a product from a shelf in Canada into the hands of a consumer in another country. So you take the raw product cost, add the carrier shipping rate, the import duties, the destination country's taxes, any customs brokerage fees, and even remote area delivery surcharges.
Jeez. You know, it reminds me of buying concert tickets online these days. You see an advertised ticket for $50, you think it's a steal, but then you go to checkout and you get hit with a venue fee, a digital processing fee, and a convenience surcharge.
Yep. The sticker shock is identical. And by the time you enter your credit card, that $50 ticket is suddenly $115.
Exactly. And for e-commerce, the research says this introduces a major strategic decision about who pays those extra fees, right? Like DAP versus DDP.
Yes. DAP stands for delivered at place, and DDP is delivered duty paid.
So if we stick with the concert ticket metaphor, DAP is basically me buying the ticket for $50, feeling great about it. But when I show up at the arena, the bouncer demands another $65 in cash before he lets me inside.
That is the harsh reality of delivered at place. The seller only charges the buyer for the product and the transportation. But once the package arrives in the destination country, local customs calculates the duties, and the carrier holds the package hostage until the customer pays.
Which must be a nightmare for customer service. I mean, consumers don't usually read the fine print.
They really don't. Right. When they get a text from a carrier demanding 30 pounds or 40 euros just to release a package they thought they already paid for, they feel tricked. It leads to terrible reviews, irate emails, and frequently they just refuse to pay.
And if they refuse, the package is abandoned. Then the business loses the product, the shipping cost, and might even have to pay to get it destroyed or sent back.
Exactly.
So why wouldn't a business just always use DDP? Because with delivered duty paid, you act like an all-inclusive resort. The customer pays one larger upfront price at checkout, and they never have to open their wallet again.
Well, DDP provides a significantly better customer experience, absolutely. But it comes with a massive strategic risk. Well, if you, the seller, are absorbing all those duties and taxes to keep the checkout price looking competitive, you are eating directly into your own profit margin. But if you pass the full landed cost onto the customer by raising the retail price, your product might suddenly look way too expensive compared to local competitors.
So it's a balancing act. If factoring in the true landed cost makes your product too expensive for a specific market, you just have to admit that market isn't viable right now.
Yes. Understanding landed cost forces you to make sound economic decisions rather than just hiding fees in a DAP model and hoping for the best.
And it's funny, the research points out this is also why the cheapest carrier rate isn't always the best choice.
Right, because an economy shipping service might save you $3 on the transport. But if they have a terrible customs clearance process that causes delays and missing documentation fees,
then you lose way more than $3 just dealing with the customer complaints.
Exactly. That $3 saved is completely wiped out.
Okay, so let's assume a business has done all the math. They've chosen a profitable market. They are ready to ship. How does the customs agent in the destination country actually know what to charge? Does some border agent have to open every single box?
Oh, no. The global supply chain would grind to an absolute halt if they did that. Instead, customs relies on a structured universal language called the Harmonized System, or HS codes.
Okay, so it's basically like a global barcode for bureaucrats.
A very specific one, yeah. The way it works is the first six digits of an HS code are identical across every participating country in the world. So the first six digits for a cotton t-shirt are exactly the same in Canada, the UK, and Japan.
Oh, that makes sense.
But then individual countries can append extra digits to the end of that root code to create deeper, highly localized classifications.
Which means precision is incredibly important on the commercial invoice. Like, you can't just scribble electronics on a customs declaration, right? Because electronics could be a musical greeting card or, like, a military-grade supercomputer.
And the tax rate on those two things cannot possibly be the same.
Yeah.
Customs authorities operate on exactitude. If you write parts, an agent will flag it because it lacks context.
Because they could be bicycle parts or airplane parts.
Exactly. You have to write aluminum automotive brake components. If you just write clothing, you risk delays. You need to say men's cotton knitted t-shirts.
And if you don't?
When a description is vague or an HS code is missing, the customs computer kicks the entry out for manual review. Your package gets pulled, a human agent investigates, your customer gets a delay, and your broker hits you with a reclassification fee.
Ouch. And beyond just the global HS codes, there is a very specific Canadian hurdle mentioned in the sources, right? Something called SEERS.
Yes. The Canadian Export Reporting System. This is a regulatory mechanism from the Canada Border Services Agency.
And who does that apply to?
If you are exporting commercial goods valued at $2,000 Canadian or more to any destination other than the United States, you cannot simply hand the box to a carrier and wave goodbye.
Wait, $2,000? And why is the U.S. exempt?
Well, Canada and the U.S. share customs data. So an import declaration in the U.S. automatically serves as an export record for Canada, which eliminates duplicate paperwork.
Oh, that's convenient. But for the rest of the world?
You are legally required to submit an electronic export declaration through the SEERS portal before the goods can leave the country. It helps the government track high-value economic data and prevents restricted goods from being shipped to embargoed nations.
Okay, but to log into the system, the notes say you need an RM export program identifier. If I already have a standard 9-digit Canadian business number for my taxes, isn't that enough?
Not for international trade, no. The standard business number is just for your corporation, but you have to activate specific accounts. If you collect sales tax, you get an RT account.
Right, the GS to HST number.
Exactly. And if you import or export goods, you must register for an RM account, which is your business number, followed by RM and four digits, like RM00001.
And if you don't have that 15-digit identifier...
Yeah, the SEERS system won't even recognize you. And your high-value shipment will just be seized at the border before it even gets on a plane.
Wow. The paperwork is just relentless. HS codes, exact descriptions, certificates of origin, SERS declarations. If an employee is manually typing all this into a portal for every single international order, that sounds like a massive typo waiting to happen.
Which is why manual data entry is truly the enemy of a growing business. The logistics research strongly recommends storing all this customs data at the SKU level within your inventory system.
So when an order comes in, the SKU automatically pulls its HS code, its weight, and its origin.
Yes, and the commercial invoice generates flawlessly every single time. It just removes human error from the equation entirely.
Okay, let's say the digital side is perfect. The SKU is updated, SEERS is happy, we still have to physically move the object. And the research describes this as a regulatory obstacle course. It's like trying to get past three distinct bouncers.
So that's a great analogy. It really is three levels of checks.
First, your own country's export rules. Second, the carrier's safety restrictions. And third, the destination country's import laws.
And failing at any of those checkpoints results in a returned package. The export rules we covered with SEERS. The third bouncer, the destination country, is pretty intuitive. You know, to check if a country allows certain foods or agricultural goods.
But the second bouncer, the carrier restrictions, that is where people get caught off guard, right? Because we assume if an item is legal to sell, it's legal to fly.
But legality isn't the carrier's concern. Safety is. Airlines and ocean freighters have incredibly rigid guidelines. The most common pitfall, actually, involves batteries.
Really? Just regular batteries?
Well, lithium-ion batteries, specifically. You might be selling a high-end electric toothbrush. But because of the fire risk and a pressurized cargo hold, an airline might classify it as a dangerous good.
Oh, wow. So your standard shipping rate just goes out the window.
Completely. You need specialized packaging, hazard labels, and a carrier certified to handle dangerous goods, which severely limits your options.
Meaning you can't just categorize your products broadly, like saying, we sell skincare, it's fine.
Exactly. You have to look at the chemical composition. A cosmetic cream might be legal in Canada, but a specific botanical extract could trigger a carrier's liquid restrictions or be prohibited by health authorities in Japan.
So you have to audit all of this before you even market to a new country. And you also have to manage the timeline. The source materia draws a very sharp line between transit time and total delivery time.
This is a vital distinction for consumer expectations. Transit time is just the carrier's optimized estimate for moving a box from an airport in Toronto to an airport in Paris.
But total delivery time is the actual reality.
Right. It's the transit time, plus the day it takes to clear French customs, plus any local bank holidays, plus the time it takes to drive out to a rural address.
So if a business promises a delivery date based solely on transit time, they are basically lying to the customer by omission.
And setting themselves up for angry emails when the package is just sitting in customs on day four.
Yeah, and managing that expectation is even more critical when things go wrong, like the $50 t-shirt return we talked about at the start.
Ah, yes. The wall of reverse logistics.
Right. If getting the package through those three bouncers on the way there is an obstacle course, getting it back is like doing the course backwards, blindfolded, while paying for the privilege.
International returns are the brutal reality of global e-commerce. You aren't just paying return postage. You face return-to-origin surcharges. And trying to recover duties and taxes from a foreign government is often impossible.
Because you paid a tax to enter the market, and the government doesn't care that the customer changed their mind.
Precisely. They keep the tax.
Which completely changes the math on lower-value products. If I sell a $20 item and reverse logistics costs $30, the only logical business decision is a refund without return policy risk.
Tell the customer to keep it or throw it away, yeah. For many businesses, that is the most cost-effective strategy, which also ties into liability versus insurance.
Oh, right. I saw that in the notes. If a carrier loses a package, they don't just write you a check for what it's worth, do they?
No, carriers have standard liability clauses based on the weight of the package, not the retail value. If you ship a 1 kilogram box of microchips worth $2,000, their standard liability might cap out at $100.
Ouch. So you have to proactively secure supplemental shipping insurance.
Yes. And if you undervalued the goods on your commercial invoice to try and save the customer import taxes, the insurance company will look at that invoice and deny your claim for the full value.
You can't have it both ways.
Exactly.
Okay, so zooming out on all this verifying origin, landed cost, HS codes, the three bouncers, returns, doing this for a single package is exhausting. Doing it for 1,000 packages requires some serious automation.
You simply cannot scale a global operation manually. The administrative overhead will consume all your profits.
And this is where the FreightCom insights really crystallize. Because a small Canadian business doesn't have the volume to negotiate huge discounts or build custom software, but unified platforms kind of fix that, don't they?
They level the playing field significantly. A platform centralizes the chaos. It integrates directly with your e-commerce storefront, uses that SKU-level data, and automatically queries multiple international carriers at once.
So you aren't just blindly using one company out of habit.
Right, because one carrier is rarely the best at everything. An international parcel service is great for a small e-commerce order to Florida, but for a bulk shipment to a distributor in Mexico, you need less than truckload freight or LTL.
And the platform lets you seamlessly switch between them based on what is best for that specific order.
All from one dashboard while consolidating your invoicing.
Ultimately giving the business total transparency at checkout. You show the customer the exact landed cost and total delivery time before they even enter their credit card. No surprises, no abandoned packages.
Because predictability is the foundation of scale. When borders stop being barriers, they become massive opportunities.
We have unpacked a ton today. The Canadian origin illusion, DAP versus DDP, the rigid language of HS codes, the three bouncers, and using platforms to automate the whole strategy.
It takes an upfront investment to set up. But the return is a truly resilient supply chain. But before we wrap up, I actually want to circle back to the very first scenario we discussed.
The $75 return fee for a $50 t-shirt.
Yes. If the mechanics of reverse logistics frequently make returning an international item more expensive than the product itself, how does that fundamentally change the very nature of what a business should even attempt to sell globally?
Oh, wow.
Could your international return strategy actually be the ultimate stress test? Mm. Like, if your margins cannot survive the cost of bringing a product back across the border, are you truly prepared to send it out in the first place?
That is a phenomenal stress test to end on. Because the carrier right really is just the tip of the iceberg. The real test is navigating everything beneath the surface. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.